In every job, you can work overtime. In every job, you have domestic situations. But only in one job, you serve the country. Slovenian Army, serving the country.
It makes you want to cry.
From the White House and the Office of the President of the United States, we present an address. Dwight D. Eisenhower. This is the farewell address for President Eisenhower, whose 8 years as chief executive come to an end at noon Friday.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
One type of song that has come into increasing prominence in recent months is the folk song of protest. You have to admire.
They even got a rhyme. So join in the folk song army. Guitars are the weapons we bring to the fight against poverty, war, and injustice. Ready, aim, sing.
Military intelligence is a military discipline that focuses on the gathering, analysis, protection, and dissemination of information about the enemy, terrain, and weather in an area of operations or area of interest. Intelligence activities are conducted at all levels, from tactical to strategic, during peacetime and in war. Most militaries maintain a military intelligence corps with specialized intelligence units for collecting information in specific ways. Militaries also typically have intelligence staff personnel at each echelon down to battalion level. Intelligence officers and enlisted soldiers assigned to military intelligence may be selected for their analytical abilities or scores on intelligence tests. They usually receive formal training in these disciplines.
If a friendly country wants to get rid of someone they suspect as a CIA spy, there are a number of ways they can go about it. Liaison, the local country's intelligence service, will come in and put a photograph down, the chief or somebody. The former NOM said he didn't understand why the agency never tried to penetrate Al-Qaeda with the program, but it's going to believe that we have.
Do you love me as much as I love you? Yes, sir, I do.
Obeying orders has always been at the core of military service, even when those orders require risking one's life in battle. However, the don't ask, don't tell policy carves out an exception. Heterosexuals cannot be expected to obey orders requiring them to work with a homosexual man or woman. Therefore, openly gay people cannot serve in the military. Earlier military policies about homosexuality were buttressed with arguments that homosexuals are security risks and inherently unfit for service. In the 1993 debates that culminated in Don't Ask, those mistaken beliefs were abandoned, and military leaders conceded that gay people have served admirably in the military. That was when the policy focus changed from homosexuals to heterosexuals, and new arguments against service by gay people were formulated. The unit cohesion argument, for example, predicts a meltdown of the social bonds necessary for accomplishing the military mission if work groups include a homosexual. The underlying belief is that heterosexuals will place the good of their unit first, except when it comes to working with gay people. In that case, they are unable or unwilling to set aside their personal prejudices. The scientific research literature dispels the notion that heterosexual personnel couldn't function with gay co-workers. Problems in unit cohesion would be rare, and when they occur, would likely result in friendships not being formed, rather than tasks not being successfully completed. Indeed, the fact that more than half of the American adult population reports personally knowing gay men or lesbians, many as close friends or co-workers, belies the assertion that heterosexuals can't get along with homosexuals. Thus, the unit cohesion argument boils down to the proposition that heterosexual service members have a right to be prejudiced against gay people and to let those prejudices affect their professional conduct. What are the roots of this belief? Although sexual prejudice has many sources in American culture, two are particularly relevant to the military policy. First, sexual prejudice reflects attitudes about gender. Many heterosexuals view lesbians and gay men as breaking society's gender rules. In an institution like the military, founded on strong traditions of masculinity, gender role violators represent dangerous subversives. Second, sexual prejudice is a basis for identity politics. Many religious and political conservatives have defined their personal identities in opposition to homosexuality. For them, expressing hostility to policies that ban anti-gay discrimination is an important way of saying, I'm not one of them.
I'm a good person.
This latter source of sexual prejudice has had perhaps the greatest impact on preserving the military policy. Just as the anti-gay military policies of England and Canada were reversed by judicial entities, the most likely route to a new policy in the United States is the courts. This is because Congress probably won't repeal Don't Ask, given the influence of conservative identity politics on the composition of the current House and Senate. The rest of us can't do much about Don't Ask in the short term, but we can be vigilant in opposing new attempts to codify sexual prejudice. Such prejudice should not be the basis for exceptions under the law.
Across different species is the capacity for learning. How is it possible to measure that capacity? The first intelligence tests for humans were developed in 1905, but these early tests were more an assessment of one's education. It tested what he had learned rather than his potential for learning. Although modern IQ tests are greatly improved, there is still some difficulty in simply translating the questions for people from different cultures. Translating for another species is an entirely different matter. Even if you just take a few examples of behavior from across the animal kingdom, it becomes apparent that intelligence is not simple. Some animals have a very great capacity for learning only in one specific area, or can perform mental tasks which humans are unable to do. Human IQ tests tend to have different sections testing a person's memory, reasoning, arithmetic, language, and concept-forming abilities. Looking at the abilities of other animals, it immediately becomes clear that they all have differing abilities in each of these areas, and possess abilities in others that humans would not even imagine. Not only that, but the difference in the natural behavior of animals is so great that it is often impossible to translate a test designed for one animal, such as a human, into an equivalent that could be carried out by another, such as a dolphin. After many years of experiments, it seems that the human brain has adapted to be particularly specialized for language. Other apes and dolphins also appear to have this specialization, and have been able to communicate with humans in startlingly coherent ways, including understanding word order in sentences. Chimpanzees, particularly the species known as bonobos, have the language capabilities of a three-year-old human. Other, less social animals appear to lack this specialization, but instead have many other abilities, such as prodigious memories.
I told the smartest person I know, big wheels turn real slow. When you finally get a bone, the throat is no dog around to catch it. The trouble with you is your life, you got values and you're immoral. You struggle cause you work too hard, not cool cause you're too real. The trouble with you is your life, like this other person I know, who says I'm the smartest person they know. And be glad that I feel like a fifth wheel.
Howard Gardner viewed intelligence as the capacity to solve problems or to fashion products that are valued in one or more cultural settings. He reviewed the literature using 8 criteria or signs of an intelligence. 1. Potential isolation by brain damage. 2. The existence of idiot savants, prodigies, or other exceptional individuals. 3. An identifiable core operation or set of operations. 4. A distinctive development history, along with a definable set of end-state performances. 5. An evolutionary history and evolutionary plausibility. 6. Support from experimental psychological tasks. 7. Support from psychometric findings. 8. Susceptibility to encoding in a symbol system. Candidates for the title of an intelligence had to satisfy a range of these criteria and must include, as a prerequisite, the ability to resolve genuine problems of difficulty within certain cultural settings. Howard Gardner initially formulated a list of 7 intelligences. The first 2 are ones that have been typically valued in schools. The next 3 are usually associated with the arts. And the final 2 are what Howard Gardner called personal intelligences. Linguistic intelligence involves sensitivity to spoken and written language, the ability to learn languages, and the capacity to use language to accomplish certain goals. This intelligence includes the ability to effectively use language to express oneself rhetorically or poetically, and language as a means to remember information. Writers, poets, lawyers, and speakers are among those that Howard Gardner sees as having high linguistic intelligence. Logical mathematical intelligence. Logical mathematical intelligence consists of the capacity to analyze problems logically, carry out mathematical operations, and investigate issues scientifically. In Howard Gardner's words, it entails the ability to detect patterns, reason deductively, and think logically. This intelligence is most often associated with scientific and mathematical thinking. Musical intelligence involves skill in the performance, composition, and appreciation of musical patterns. It encompasses the capacity to recognize and compose musical pitches, tones, and rhythms. According to Howard Gardner, musical intelligence runs in an almost structural parallel to linguistic intelligence. Bodily kinesthetic intelligence entails the potential of using one's whole body or parts of the body to solve problems. It is the ability to use mental abilities to coordinate bodily movements. Howard Gardner sees mental and physical activity as related. Spatial intelligence involves the potential to recognize and use the patterns of wide space and more confined areas. Interpersonal intelligence is concerned with the capacity to understand the intentions, motivations, and desires of other people. It allows people to work effectively with others. Educators, salespeople, religious and political leaders, and counselors all need a well-developed interpersonal intelligence. Intrapersonal intelligence entails the capacity to understand oneself, to appreciate one's feelings, fears, and motivations. In Howard Gardner's view, it involves having an effective working model of ourselves and to be able to use such information to regulate our lives.
Cultivating emotional intelligence. In search of a blend of emotion and intellect. Why? What factors are at play when people of high IQ flounder and those of modest IQ do surprisingly well? I would argue that the difference quite often lies in the abilities called emotional intelligence, which includes self-control, zeal, and persistence.
Something. Everybody. your number's void, then you really need a toy called this beep. Well, don't you see what gets you rooting right in this night and this beep? What have you been? My call to reach you, girl, and where around the web, maybe.
Smartest idiot, formerly a dumbbell.
What car do you drive?
32.
What's your favorite sport?
3 years.
One of the topics we wanted to talk about today is something called artificial intelligence.
Well, I think artificial intelligence will be coming, but I think it's going to take 50, perhaps maybe 100 years before humans wind up in a zoo and our robot creations throw peanuts at us behind bars and make us dance. It's called quantum computers, which is now exciting the world and igniting the imagination of physicists around the world.
Several years ago, an experiment was done which seemed to show that listening to classical music could improve memory. This effect has come to be known as the Mozart effect, because the musical selection that seemed to most improve memory was a song by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Let's look a bit closer at the original experiment and other experiments. The original experiment had college students listen for 10 minutes to either Mozart's Sonata for Two Pianos in D Major, a relaxation tape, or Silence. Immediately after listening to these selections, students took a spatial reasoning test. The results showed that the students' scores improved after listening to the Mozart tape compared to either the relaxation tape or Silence. Unfortunately, the researchers found that the effects of the music lasted only 10 to 15 minutes. Nevertheless, these researchers believed that memory was improved because music and spatial abilities share the same pathways in the brain. Therefore, they thought, the music warms up the brain for the spatial reasoning test. Other laboratories have tried to use the music of Mozart to improve memory, but have failed. For example, one group of scientists used a test where students had to listen to a list of numbers and then repeat them backwards. Listening to Mozart before this test had no effect on the students. Other researchers have said that the original work on the Mozart effect was flawed because, 1, only a few students were tested, and 2, it was possible that listening to Mozart really did not improve memory. Rather, it was possible that the relaxation test and silence impaired memory. So, if people want to improve their intelligence, should they run out and buy some classical music? Should children start piano lessons when they are young? You are sure to get some beautiful music, but there is no conclusive evidence that it will improve your intelligence. Also, there is no evidence that music enhances memory permanently. More research and testing needs to be done to see if and how music and memory interact.
has been the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.